many alcoholics.
And we are in for a treat tonight because originally the person that was going to speak tonight had to cancel, had a conflict, something else going on. And I had met Tony back in September for Recovery Month. He spoke here. And I said when he was speaking, when I met him then, I said, you know, there's something about this guy. I'd love him to come speak at First Friday. I was thinking next year, spring or something. But when the opportunity arose, at the last minute, when I had a cancellation, I said, let me just reach out and see if he can do it. And he didn't hesitate. He said, sure, I'll do it. And he put me on the calendar right away, drove all the way from Athens to get here tonight. Humble kind of guy, sitting way in the back. But you're gonna enjoy his story, and you'll relate to a lot, and you're gonna hear how the depths of desperation of addiction and the hope and experience of being in recovery. It's pretty cool. Speaking of that, like he is the head guy for Faces and Voices of Recovery. I'm sure he'll mention all this. So I'm gonna let Tony tell Tony's story. Come on up, buddy.
VIP treatment. They fix the microphones and everything. That's what's up. Hello, everybody. My name is Tony, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. In other places, I introduce myself as a person in long-term recovery, and what that means for me is that it's been over 21 years since I've used any mood-altering substance, right? And because of my recovery, I get to do some really, really cool stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Eddie called and I said I was gonna show up, and I was able to show up. And he called like 2-3 weeks ago, right? I mean, I don't know. Can y'all hear me? And I was able to show up on a Friday from Athens. You know, and yeah, let me tell you, I did something really first time ever, right? So tomorrow is the SEC game. The Georgia Bulldogs are, you know, from Athens, Georgia. It just so happens, by coincidence, right, that when I'm coming down 316, the players, the buses are coming down 316, right? And I guess the band, the players, and they were being escorted by State Patrol car, and he had his lights flashing, and we're driving side by side, and with his lights flashing, I was able to pass him. That was the first time ever. And I didn't get pulled over and anything like that. It was really cool. You know what I'm saying? I never did anything like that before. But you know, and I mean that's just like a simple story, right? But you know what I mean, like I remember when it wasn't always like that. I remember when I didn't even have a car, right? I remember when if I did get pulled over, it was more than likely, if I was driving, it wasn't mine, it was probably stolen. I didn't have a driver's license, I probably had some warrants, you know what I'm saying? And you know, I was probably gonna go to jail, right? So now, you know, to be able to tell somebody that I'm gonna show up and actually show up and show up early, you know what I'm saying, on the day that I said is a beautiful thing. You know, I'm gonna tell you, like, just to qualify, right? I belong here, right? You know what I'm saying? I used drugs for probably about 25 years. You know, drugs took me to a place of desperation. I was homeless. I've been in prison. I stole from my family. I got to the point where I used to live and live to use, right? And I got to the point where I wanted to die. You know what I mean? So I would put myself in situations hoping that somebody would kill me. I'm originally from New York City, born and raised. I was born in Harlem, grew up in the Bronx. I got to Georgia thinking that if I got out of New York City that everything would be all right. And what I found out is that wherever I go, I take me with me. You know what I'm saying? And what I found out is that they had cocaine here in Georgia too. And so I'm a convicted felon in the state of Georgia as well, right? But I'm grateful for my experience, right? Because it allows me to do what I do now. And I was introduced to recovery in the Clark County Jail in Athens, Georgia, through H&I. So if anybody is familiar with H&I hospitals and institutions, these are individuals who volunteer their time to take a message of recovery into the jail. My hat goes off to you. If y'all saved my life. And so I heard this message, and this was back in 2001. And I heard it before, and I would always try to, rearrange the equation. You know what I mean? If I would just stop doing this, I'm not going to sniff at this, I'm just going to smoke it, or I'm just going to drink, or I'm going to just sell it, or no matter what I tried to do, it always ended up the same for me, in a place of desperation. Most of the time, it got to the point that incarceration and homelessness was huge, and violence, a lot of violence is a huge part of my story. And so I remember I was sitting in the Clark County Jail back in 2001, and I was 35 years old, right? And I was married. I come from a really good family, two-parent home. They migrated over from Puerto Rico. They really didn't speak English, but they were hard workers, and they provided a really, really good home. And I wasn't raised to turn out to be a drug addict, but here I am. You know what I'm saying? I still did, right? And so I inherently thought that there was something wrong with me. You know what I mean? I could never fit in. I could never, in my mind, the sense of inadequacies was so strong, and the feelings to belong and to be accepted really ruled what I did. Like the first time that I used, I didn't like it. I didn't like the way that it made me feel. But what I liked was the next day when my peers said, "Yo, Tone, last night, yo, you whiskey, yo, you killed it." You know what I mean? And that feeling of acceptance, fueled me, and I wanted more of that. And I equated using to getting that feeling, and it got to the point that it became natural to use. In the beginning, it was fun, then it became work, and then it became painful. You know what I'm saying? And that, you can use drugs for that, or for me, it's been my experience, and anything that I use to change the way that I feel, you know what I mean, and not deal with responsibility, it usually comes in the same order. It usually starts out with being fun, and then it becomes work to maintain it, and then after a while, it becomes painful, right? And I have a low, I thought I have a low resistance to pain, but I use for a long time. And so, I'm in the jail, right? And I'm like, man, I don't want to do this anymore, man. I didn't want to stop using. I didn't want the consequences, right? I got tired of, another man telling me, or just another adult, right? Because women work there too, to tell me when I could eat. You know what I'm saying? When I could sleep. I got tired of being in a cell with four other people, and I had to use the bathroom, or people were using the bathroom, you know what I'm saying, while we were all in the same cell, you know what I mean? I got tired of changing my jumpsuit. I got tired of trying to make a collect phone call. I got tired of trying to make commissary. I got tired of making, you know what I mean? I just got tired. But I knew that in order for me to not put myself in that situation, I had to stop using. So I go to this meeting, and this is a true story, right? I go to this meeting, and some of the guys that brought the meeting in back then are in my network now. Those are my brothers. You know what I'm saying? But I was listening to them, and I was picking apart their stories, looking at the differences, right? I was looking at them like, yo, you lame mother. You know what I'm saying? Like, you probably don't even know how to use. This is what I'm saying to myself, right? Like, you got the, y'all some sorry ass. You know what I mean? I'm looking for everything in their story to disqualify them and separate myself, right? This is what I'm doing. And then the light bulb hit me. Not that meeting, maybe about three or four meetings later, right? And they came every week. And I had this moment of clarity. And what came up for me was that if I'm so cool, if I got it together, why do they get to go home after this meeting and I got to go back to a cell? And I was like, holy shit, right? So there's one, there's this thing, like, I don't know if you've ever been locked up, and you don't need to raise your hand or anything like that, but there's this, like, laying on your bunk. I don't know about it. You can say whatever you want in the day room. You can say anything you want in the chow line or in the yard. But when you're in that bunk by yourself, looking up, you know what I'm saying? And you, it was just me with me. There's a way that the truth has a way of piercing. You can't, like, you know, you can't deny the truth. You know what I mean? And I like, well, maybe it's me. You know what I mean? And that's what, like, that's what came up. Like, maybe it's me. I can no longer, and I didn't hear this till later on, but I started getting a glimpse that I could no longer blame people, places, or things for my situation, right? And so the next time I went to the meeting, instead of just shutting them out completely, I started to ask questions. I said, hey, can y'all tell me how y'all, like, just deal with life and don't end up here? You know what I'm saying? Can you tell me how you deal with your family and don't get into a fight? You know what I mean? Can you tell me how you go to work and wait for your paycheck all week or 2 weeks, you know what I'm saying, for that little bit of money? You know what I mean? And, like, how do you, like, how do y'all do that, right? And I was given a suggestion, right? And it was the best suggestion that was ever given to me, and it changed my life. They said, Tony, check this out. When you have a release date, like, are you gonna get out? I said, yeah, this is just a violation. You know what I mean? I'm coming home. I'm coming home in a couple of months. They said, Tony, instead of going to the package store to celebrate, right, when you get out, right, call us, we'll pick you up and we'll go to a meeting that first day. And I did that. You know what I'm saying? That was the first time that I didn't come home from an institution and go celebrate. And I made a meeting that day, and that was June 24th. June 24th would be 22 years that I haven't used. You know what I'm saying? Like, I never used again. And some of those guys are still part of my network, because it doesn't matter. Like, look, I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous, right? That's my fellowship. That's my, you know, that's my pathway. You know, and that's what works for me. But what I would encourage you to do, stay connected. Find something that works for you and get connected to that, and get around some people that are doing the things that you want to learn how to do. Right? Because, you know what I mean, one of the things that I found out is that I can't recover by myself. You know what I'm saying? And I stay around people who will risk my anger and tell me the truth, you know what I mean, to save my life. Because even with 21 plus years, I still don't do everything right. I still make mistakes. I still can get angry. I can still get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I could still think that it's all about me. I got my partner in the back, and she can attest to that, right? You know what I mean? I could still think that, you know what I mean? Like, you know, if y'all could just do it, if y'all would just listen to me and do what I say, we would all be all right. We would just all get along. You know what I mean? You know, and life is not like that. When I got out of the year 2001, when I did get released, I did make a meeting, and the first job that I got was that of a dishwasher. Right, I got a dishwashing job part time, $6.50 an hour. I had two probations, my son at the time, my son from the marriage I was in, he could stay out longer than I could. He was like 14, 15 years old, and I was 30-something years old, and I had to be in the house at 7, and he can stay out longer than I could. And I, you know what I mean? And so there was a lot of feelings, you know what I'm saying, that I had to deal with and what I learned, right? But I was still going to meetings, right? You know what I mean? And I was talking, I learned to talk about that experience in the Clark County Jail, and asking how do you do this, opened me up to continue to ask questions and connect, you know what I'm saying, with other people that were living life successfully, at least in my eyes, right? And so, you know, I was going to meetings and I was talking, you know what I mean? I was sharing about what I was going through. And there was times when I was really, really angry the way that my life had at that time ended up. And I thought that all that there was all that there was gonna be. I thought that recovery was gonna be boring. Like, what am I gonna do now? You know what I mean? I'm gonna be a laborer for the rest of my life. I don't have a college degree. Poor me, poor me, poor me. Y'all know the rest, pour me a drink, right? But what I found out in, you know, the more experienced members would say, yo, Tony, keep coming back. You know what I mean? And it's a meeting before the meeting, a meeting during the meeting, and a meeting after the meeting. So I continue to stay connected and sharing, but I continue to meet my responsibilities and go to work and pay my probation and make my curfew. You know what I'm saying? And time started going by. And what I found out was that the disease or the illness is way more than just not using, right? It's the way that I feel, that my feelings, my emotions can get me in trouble. You know what I'm saying? And how do I deal? I never knew how to grow up. I looked like a man, I looked like an adult, but inside I was this little boy, you know what I'm saying? Who just, every time, you know, I got angry, I want to take all the marbles and take them home. You know what I'm saying? It was an all or nothing. If it wasn't my way, if I didn't get what I wanted, I always wanted to feel good. You know what I'm saying? And what I found out, that life is not about that. That recovery doesn't exempt me from painful situations. You know what I'm saying? That I can still go through things. That recovery is about dealing with life on life's terms without self-destructing to the best of my ability. You know what I'm saying? And that's not a clause, like, you know what I'm saying? But it's not about perfection, it's about progression, and I need to continue to keep coming back. And you know, abstinence is my path, and I haven't used in over 21 years, and I've had to white knuckle it sometimes, man, but you know, that it's way more than that. You know what I'm saying? Again, you know, yeah, this is a meeting, you know, that, and I mean, let's not forget about the drugs, right? Because the biggest thing that I have to remember is to stay away from the first one. As long as I stay away from the first one, man, I got a shot to deal with all that other stuff. But when I start using it, the obsession and compulsion to use just overrides everything else to the point that I don't care about, you know, consequences from law enforcement, from, you know what I mean, from family members. I've missed funerals. I didn't even know family members were dead. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't until I came home from a run a month later that I found out that my first cousin had passed away and I missed the funeral, that my uncle had passed away and I missed the funeral. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there was one of the biggest things, like, was every time I came home from a prison, jail, or some type of institution, there would be pictures all over the house of events. You know what I'm saying? You know, because I come from a close-knit family, from holidays and birthdays and just graduations, and I was never in the picture, literally or figuratively. And I needed to learn how to get in and stay in the picture. Ooh, today I'm a homeowner, today I'm a business owner, today I'm gainfully employed, today, you know what I mean, I have one car, I have three cars, and those are just things. And let me say, because all of that stuff fits into my to my pipe. You know what I'm saying? If I'm not careful, I can smoke all of that up, right? You know what I mean? I'm, you know, and this is not about fear. This is about a healthy respect to, with the illness, right? I live with a disease which there is no known cure. However, I'm not afflicted by it. I live with it. I strive. I live a good life today. The things that I thought about like 20 years ago, if I was going to be a laborer or for the rest of my life, no, I'm actually a director of an organization called Faces and Voices of Recovery. Prior to that, I was the director for the Office of Recovery Transformation at the Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities in the state of Georgia. You know, and I still don't have a college degree. And I'm not saying that to brag, I'm just saying how blessed I am. You know what I mean? And I have to remember that, right, so that I don't mess it up. I just had a son. He's 2 months old, my first biological son. You know what I mean? At my age, I have his name is Braden Antonio Sanchez. And when I look at him, I look at perfection. I look at God's grace, you know what I'm saying, that he has bestowed upon me. Because anyway, I, man. And one of the things that I learned, right? I've been to treatment, right? Throughout my using that, I think I've been to treatment 3 times, right? And I used to hear, this is not for me to dispute, like anything that you're learning or you heard or anything like that. But my belief system has developed and changed for me, right? And I do what works for me, right? So I'm not gonna say anything off the wall, right? But one of the things that I heard early on was that I had to do it for me. And I believe that. I believe that. But sometimes I don't have enough to get up for me. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes I get up for my son. You know what I mean? Sometimes I get up, and not that he becomes more important than my relationship with God and my recovery, you know what I mean? Like that. But there's days, man, I'm so grateful for the relationships that I have, right, that I don't wanna mess up. So that when I do wanna mess up, when I don't wanna get up and participate in life, I know that I can't do that because people depend on me today, right? You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to mess that up. I don't know if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? So my relationships for me are really, really important. You know what I mean? And sometimes, like I said, sometimes I don't have enough in me to do it for myself, but I'll do it for somebody else that I love, right? Until I get to the place where I'm centered enough and I'm doing it for me again. Does that make sense? Right? But I'm grateful for that. And then sometimes I don't want the responsibilities of other people depending on me. Even to this day, I say, oh, you know what I mean? But like, you know, and that's okay. But I stay connected to my network, and I go to meetings, so because I can talk about any and all of those things, and not be judged. Or even if I am, so what? You know what I'm saying? So what? You know, talked about the birth of my son, right? I also lost my mother this year, and I'm a mama's boy. You know what I'm saying? I love my mom. And when I first got into recovery, you know, and my mother was, my parents, both my mom and my dad, they lived in New York, and I was down here in Georgia. And I remember like my first year, like the first 9 months, I wanted my mom to see me. You know what I mean? I wanted her to see her son not using. You know what I'm saying? I wanted my mother to see her son with a piece of job, you know what I'm saying, and stay on probation, but actually showing up, you know what I mean, and doing what I needed to do. And it wasn't until I had about 18 months that my mom's got to see me. But even then, I was doing what I needed to do to stay in recovery and not use, right? However, I still had reservations, right? And I still was looking for kinks within the in the program so that I could say, aha, I know this was bullshit, right? Right? But like my reservation was that if anything ever happened to my mom's, man, all bets is off. All bets off. You know what I'm saying? Y'all can have this. You know what I mean? And my mom's passed on August 1st. She had a heart attack on July 19th. And then we had a baby shower on July 30th, and people came from New York, Florida, Arizona, Virginia. There was people from, and what I found out, I was fussing because we had having this baby shower, and it's turned out to be expensive. You know what I mean? I was fussing because I was spending, you know, like $1,000, $2,000. And I'm like, man, I could have bought these gifts myself, right? don't judge me, right? But what I found out, right, was that, like, then, like, I don't know, in one of those moments where I was all up in my feelings, and I started seeing people and hearing who was coming, right? I knew that this wasn't just a baby shower, that this was a family reunion, that this was about my mom. Because she was here. By this time, last year, her and my dad sold their house in the Bronx, and they moved with me in Athens, right? So she passed in Athens, in Piedmont Hospital. And it turned out just like that. You know what I mean? There's a picture. We took a picture in front of the house, and it's like about 30 family members. And my mom and the, you know, the OGs, you know, my mother, my dad, my aunt, who was 92 years old, who came, they all up in the front. You know what I'm saying? And 2 days later, my mother passed. You know, and I was like, wow. You know what I mean? I got the call, and, you know, I was, because the night of the baby shower, we had to call an ambulance and take her to the hospital. Her chest was hurting again. I went to see her. We went to see her the next day, Sunday. She said, you know, she was laughing in the eyes. She said, Tony, my chest was hurting so much, and they gave me this thing called morphine, and it was good. She said, go get the doctor and tell him to give me some more of that. And that was like one of the last conversations that I had with her. We said some other stuff, and I kissed her goodbye. And she said, hey, remember, they're going to let me out tomorrow. Be ready. I said, Ma, don't worry, I got you. And it was about 7 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, I got a call, and it was from the hospital. I thought they were telling me to come get her. She was going to get dialysis and come get her, and they told me that she had passed that morning. I had to pull over, man. I started crying, man. You know what I mean? There's moments that I still cry. You know what I mean? The other day I was holding Braden and him, you know, and I was like looking at him, and I started thinking about my mother and the fact that he never got to meet mom, and I started crying. But I need to tell you that I'm saying all this because even as painful as it was, and even as painful as it is, and as much as I miss my mother, I didn't use. You know what I'm saying? Like that reservation that I talked about, that if anything ever happened to my mother, you know what I mean? That all bets were off, man, I did not use. You know what I'm saying? And I'm here to tell you, right, that, like, I don't know what you're, no matter what it's going to be, right? But, like, one of the things that I need to tell you is that, you know, you can stick and stay. And I didn't do it by myself. I did it because of the love of the fellowship and the people that I have in my life who love me through the pain, who are still loving me through the pain, because I don't have to go through anything by myself. And anytime I go through something painful, again, I don't have to self-destruct. And another thing, what I learned is that everything we go through, good, bad, or indifferent, is experience to share with somebody else so that we can help them go through it. You know what I'm saying? you know, so that I need to let you know that if you have a reservation, and if your reservation is that if something happens to your mom, you know what I mean, you or to your, you know, to your dad, that I need to tell you that I feel what you need to feel, but you don't have to use no matter what. You still don't have to self-destruct. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm here to tell you that. Not that I'm this great I am, you know, I'm telling you that. And again, not by myself, you know what I'm saying, but with the love of others. You know, this is, I don't recover by myself. No, I got here to Georgia. I was married previous to the relationship I'm in now. And at the time, she got sick, and so she, because diabetes, she had diabetes, and diabetes led to heart disease, and heart transplants, and kidney failure, and dialysis, and strokes, and all of that, you know what I mean? And, you know, and I was a caregiver for like 15 years. You know, while I'm in recovery, and I'm going, I definitely needed meetings then. You know what I mean? And still do, you know? And there was times, she ended up getting a kidney pancreas transplant. And so we had like a little reprieve for about 5-6 years, and then both organs failed. And I remember when she got sick again, and the level of intensity of her illness was so severe that it just didn't impact her. It impacted me as well. And I didn't want to do it. You know what I'm saying? I didn't. Like, there was times when I just wanted to leave the keys. Like, yo, you can have all this shit. I'm out of here. But I didn't. And I seen, I didn't say, I'm not going to lie and say that I did my marriage perfectly, you know what I mean? But I was there when she took her last breath. You know what I'm saying? I was there when she, you know, matter of fact, I was holding her hand when she passed. And she passed at home, you know what I'm saying? And that's what she wanted. And I was able to honor her, you know. This is a little bit over 2 years ago. So it's still fresh, you know what I mean? Right prior to that, my sponsor passed away. You know, he went to the VA right here in Atlanta, small procedure, ended up getting a heart attack, and then a stroke, and passed away. So these last couple of years, man, I've been dealing with the loss, and then, you know, COVID, and just some of not just the loss of people, who, you know, but just the way of life, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's been a hard, you know, difficult couple of years that, like 2 years ago, with about 19 years in recovery, I found myself in a place, man, where I was in so much pain that I thought that the only way that I could get out of it was to use. You know what I mean? I had to get on my knees, man. I had to go back to some basics and really like surrender again and make virtual meetings, because there weren't any live meetings at the time. This is during COVID, and I'm rocking myself to sleep and praying to God, man, the God of my understanding, like, please help me, man, because I don't wanna use, man, but I don't wanna feel this anymore. And what happened was that by me opening myself up and letting people really know what I was going through, you know what I'm saying? You know, the love of the fellowship, you know, I was able to get that again, and they were able to love me through it. Not just with the help of people in my network, and I was able to meet other people, but again, doing the very things that I learned in the very beginning. I go to meet, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, get a gratitude list, You know, I mean, the things that I was taught in the very beginning were the very things that I had to do again to save my life, because I was on the verge of throwing it all away. I'm here to tell you, man, that I don't feel like that anymore. You know, and I know I've got about 5 minutes, so I'm gonna close. I'm not in that same place, right? But I guess I'm sharing that to tell you, you know, we keep what we have with vigilance, right? You know what I'm saying? It's my responsibility to always maintain a healthy respect for this illness, right? And that anytime I put anything else before it, right? And I talked about getting up for other people, but when I stop going to meetings because, you know, the job is more important, or the relationship is more important, or just I think I've passed certain things and I don't need y'all anymore, that's exactly where the disease wants me to be. It'll grab my hand and slow walk me. You know what I'm saying? And it is so patient. You know what I mean? It is so insidious. It is so baffling. You know what I'm saying? And this is not to scare you, but if you're not scared, you know what I mean? Just from opioids alone, over 100,000 people died last year. Like, god damn. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want to go back out because I don't know if I have another recovery in me. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, I don't know if I've had the opportunity to make it back. And I've in this life, man, that has been created through recovery, man, I've met some people, right? And I've developed some relationships, some bridges that I thought were burnt down have been rebuilt, that I don't even want to mess those up anymore. You know what I'm saying? Not only the relationship that I have with God is amazing, but the relationship that I have with myself. You know what I mean? And I can do better. I can lose some weight, right? You know what I mean? I get it. But there's some things that I just don't do to myself anymore. You know what I'm saying? I've learned to be pretty decent to me. You know what I mean? I learned to be a friend to me. You know what I'm saying? And with doing that, I learned to be there for others as well. You know, and I can't wait to see, you know, my son grow up. You know, I'm excited about giving him the opportunity to push me in a wheelchair. Yeah, you know, I just can't. But I am just so honored to be here, man. Thank you all for being here. It is a great day to be in recovery, and thanks for allowing me to share.
Great story. Great story. Appreciate it, Tony. You came all the way from Athens to share that with us. So everybody, give him another round of applause.